It's always a treat when Congressman Darren LaHood comes in studio. We talked to you on the phone quite a bit. Good to see you in person, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, Greg and Dan. Good to be with you. And congratulations to Julia on 10-year anniversary.
10 years, yeah. Man. That's great. Isn't that great? It is a complicated world we live in. We have a lot of things to talk to you about. But let's, first of all, talk about this bill that I know you're going to have to go back for, and all that's going to happen in the House later this week or later next week. Is it next week?
This Friday.
Danny has, because he can never remember the name of it, has called it what, Dan?
The Inflation Downer Bill.
The Inflation Downer Bill, which, of course, is hilarious. But there's so many things in this bill that the Senate passed the other day. There's climate. There's inflation stuff. Give us your snapshot of it.
Well, unfortunately, it's a very partisan bill. If you saw the vote in the Senate, it was a 50-50, and Vice President Harris had to come in for the deciding vote. So there was no Republican votes. You know, if you think about this, Greg and Dan, we've spent $9 trillion of your money over the last 2.5 years because of COVID. $9 trillion. Okay. So when we talk about why we have high inflation at a 40-year high, it's at 9% last month.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Tell me some of the categories where that money went.
Well, during COVID, we had to spend money on vaccines. That was needed, right? I supported that.
Sure.
We needed money for PPP loans. That was good money that went to small businesses. My take is we probably spent $3 trillion too much. So we've inflated the economy. I mean, we gave a lot of checks away. Some of that was warranted. We've given a lot of money to lots of different places, farmers, other. So in my view, why we have high inflation is the government spent way too much money. We're $30 trillion in debt now.
Okay.
And so I don't think spending more money is a way to do that. I don't think raising taxes is a way to do that. Now, my colleagues on the other side, the Democrat side, they have a different view on this. So this bill focuses, as you said, on climate change, right? Talks about how we make it easier for people to get electric vehicles.
Right.
You know, supporting windmills, alternative energy sources. Again, I don't think that's the right approach. And I don't think, again, spending more money by the federal government is a way to get out of a recession.
What is there anything in this bill that you do like? I know it's hard to say that because it's so complicated. It's a huge piece of legislation.
Well, one thing that, listen, I'm all for the free market system dictating where we go. I mean, we have Rivian right down the road here. If we're going to go to electric vehicles, let the free market system do it. I don't think what I don't like is government putting their thumb on the scales and saying, you're gonna move to going to, you know, wind energy, or you're going to electric, or all those things. So those things concern me, Greg, on the government dictating how you're going to do it. The other thing that's really concerning, in this bill, we hire 87,000 new IRS agents.
I wanted to ask you about
that. Now, IRS contends they're not going to go after the middle class. And Republicans feel they're going to go after the middle class.
Well, here's what I say about that. What? Well, what else are they going to do? There's 87,000 of them. They're going to all go after the handful of very, very rich people? That's not going to happen. They got to do something.
After they hire these 87,000 IRS workers, IRS will now be larger than the State Department, larger than DOD, larger than the Commerce Department. So there's real concerns there.
That is a concern.
It is, right? Concern. I mean, so that's another thing that, I'm going to read the bill like I do every single bill, but right now I can't support it.
Okay. There's one thing I did like that I've been saying all along is to give some incentives, especially to the middle class, for smart thermostats, home insulation, things that can really help. The Ameren bills have doubled around here. And to help the working class. Now, I have a son who's real smart. He said if you look at the carbon footprint, 80 to 85% of the United States is industry. Only about 15, 20% are the actual homes that people use. However, if we can help people out to help their bills and lower their footprint by helping them invest in their home and things that help with energy, I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, Dan, I think where we can find more efficiencies and more effectiveness when it comes to our footprint, I think that's fine. But it's what level the government is involved with that. If you look at the last 25 years, in America today, we have some of the cleanest air, cleanest water, safest environment. Much of that has been done through innovation, creativity, through the private sector. The government can play a role in that, in incentivizing that. It's how much they put their thumb on the scales.
And let that, this will lead into something else. I don't want to sacrifice and push too hard our economy in reaching certain goals when the rest of the world isn't. And now, because of Nancy Pelosi's trip, China's cut off any sort of climate agreement.
Well, if you look at the pollutants that India and China put out, I mean, it's exorbitant, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't comply with any international rules, any international standards. And to your point, now they've cut off complying with anything. They're the biggest polluters and the biggest contributor to the climate change that we've had. And I think that is real. It's not the U.S., it's them. So how do you get them to be compliant?
I don't want to sacrifice our economy and constrain it when they're polluting.
We're talking with Congressman Darren LaHood. I have a question about government spending, and you briefly mentioned the word, I think, a minute ago, farmers. It's not lost on most of us that the ag world is oftentimes the beneficiary of government money. And so where's the line on that? You know what I mean? Where's the line when you say, well, we don't want to artificially prop up, and I'm maybe using that word, that phrase wrong, but we don't want to artificially prop up this industry or that industry, but we've been doing it with ag, and this is our number one industry in this country, in this state, so I'm happy to help them. But how do you differentiate that?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, that's part of the role of government is figuring out when industries need assistance, when they need help. I mean, crop insurance is a big issue we deal with farmers, right? So that's the government coming in and backing up when you don't have a particular good. I think it's worked fairly well. But it doesn't mean that we can't always look at these programs. And that's part of the role, our oversight role in Congress, is looking at programs that work, that don't work, streamlining those, making those better, making those stronger, and cutting back. But it's hard. When you turn on the spigot of government, regardless, it's hard to shut that off.
No, no doubt.
And in this particular bill, again, it's turning on more government spending. It's about $800 billion that we're adding.
Is there stuff in this bill that is specific to ag?
There is not in this specific bill. But I'm just saying, looked at the bills, the money that we spent on COVID, it went to everybody.
There was a bill proposed by Chuck Grassley, and I heard this on the RFD radio network, which comes on before we come on, and the budget office looked at it and said the Senate bill was better than Grassley's because it was too kind. And that's the thing. If you're Chuck Grassley, you're going to try to...
That's what he drives. Yeah,
that's you're going to try to get as much. So even within your own party, you really have to look at to see who's trying to get more of the money, right?
Well, everybody's representing their constituency. Yeah. All politics is local, and that's local for him.
Oh, by the way, Joe Manchin, part of the deal, got that big Western pipeline deal done. Did you see that? Well, it's going to add a lot of natural gas in, but it also is going to help out the West Virginians very well.
I want to ask you a question, and we only have about a minute to ask this, and then can you stick around until 8?
Okay. Yep.
Back to the electric vehicle conversation. Dan and I have been talking about this now for weeks, months, maybe a couple years. So it seems to me when General Motors announces, look, We're in the electric vehicle business, and in the next X number of years, we're going to have this number of vehicles on the market, right, in the market. It seems to me that General Motors isn't doing that to be kind. They are doing that to make money. They know there is money to be made there. So I think sometimes people go, I feel like this is being pushed down my throat, this electric vehicle craze or fad or whatever it is. It's not a fad. If General Motors says they're in, right? So is it the market telling us that we're going down electric vehicle lane, or is it the government, or is it environmental people? I don't really understand where it's coming from.
Well, I think it's a combination, Greg. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's heading that direction, but it's how much you want your tax money going to incentivize that and do that. I mean, my take on it is I think we're going to be there, and it may happen in 5 years, it may happen in 10 years, it may happen in 15, and it's going to be driven by consumers buying that. It's whether you want the federal government subsidizing that and giving money and doing these things
for instance, GM, is that the plan right now? The federal government's going to help subsidize all that?
You're going to get a tax credit.
That's the money they're making.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, you're going to get a tax credit to go buy a GM or buy another one.
I'm going to be more conservative and say it's the environmentalists and the government on the left that's saying, you're going to do this.
Yeah.
We're going to punish you. We're going to punish people who drive gasoline, eventually, cars. And so GM's throwing their hands up and going, might as well get in on the party.
It is unclear to me how this all plays out. So you, as a federal, former federal prosecutor, have probably been down this path a couple of times over the years of you doing that. So what do we need to understand? What don't we know? What will we know later? How does this play?
A couple observations on that, Greg. First of all, this is really unprecedented and really stunning in a lot of ways that a former president and someone that's likely to run for president again would have his residence searched in Mar-a-Lago.
Right.
I would also just say, you know, people do not want a politicized or weaponized Department of Justice or FBI.
I would say.
We saw that with the Russiagate that, you know, we had a Steele dossier that was completely made up and fake and was went to a federal judge and there were search warrants and FISAs done that were inappropriate and targeted Trump at the time. And I think people were really concerned about that. What I would just say is we need transparency. We mm-hmm. need accountability and find out what happened. I said yesterday in a statement, Director Wray of the FBI and Merrick Garland of DOJ have to come forward and let us know what they were up to down there and what they found and let the American people know.
Is it different because he is former president and possibly a candidate? Because if they raided my house, if the FBI raided my house looking for some evidence of criminal activity, would it be anybody's business what they were looking for?
Well, this is different. Because
okay, is that the difference?
Well,
okay.
I would just say this. You have a person that's going to likely run for president,
okay.
and you have a sitting president who's in charge of DOJ that's executing a search warrant.
Okay.
Now, I'm all for the rule of law, and I'm all for federal law enforcement doing things the right way,
right.
but we need to know what they were looking for, what they found, and what occurred.
Do you believe that Biden didn't know? I
find that very hard to believe
that
his handpicked person at DOJ, it didn't tell him or tell the White House.
But I looked at a timeline. They've been asking since January about every week. Trump tried to block it in the Supreme Court and ruled against him. They've been wanting these for a long time, saying
these main documents. You mean?
Yeah. They've specifically have been in contact with him since January.
Yeah, I would just say this though, Danny. When you go to get a search warrant approved by a federal judge, which they did in this case, you have to have fresh information. Now we don't know what was put into that affidavit to that federal judge that asked for those. But you're correct. There's been a timeline here where they've requested that. There was agents down there 3 months ago and wanted to see where these documents were. So my take on this is they have fresh information that they received in the last couple weeks here that they went to a federal judge and got that. Because the standard that you need to get that approval is very, very high. So my take on this, they must have had new information, somebody on the inside, some type of smoking gun. But again, we go back to we ought to hold the FBI and DOJ to the highest standard possible. We need to find out with full transparency what they were looking for and what they found.
So you're kind of, you know, Tim Scott, a Republican out of South Carolina, said let's withhold judgment. But he goes, if they can't give us a good idea why or come up with anything, then the criticism's going to come down heavy on the FBI. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Well, but I think the criticism is still there. This is an unprecedented thing. I think they got to come forward sooner rather than later. I mean, I signed a letter yesterday as part of the Intelligence Committee going to Director Wray saying we need a full briefing on why this was done and the reason why it was done. I think the American people deserve to know that. This is a very unusual situation.
Mm-hmm. I have two things to say. One, that to what you just said, if you are as a member of that committee briefed, do you have an obligation to tell us then?
I cannot reveal what I learn in the Intelligence Committee, again, these are people that work for the American people.
No,
Director Wray, Merrick Garland, they have the obligation.
And the other thing I was saying, when you and I and Danny, Dan and I think are older than you, but when we were all young, very young, there was a guy that did weaponize the FBI. His name was J. Edgar Hoover, and he did it for decades.
Yeah.
And we found out all of that later. We found out it was so it is not unprecedented for the FBI to be weaponized.
And the IRS.
We've done it before. And the IRS. Too.
Well, listen, people have should be very dubious and concerned about the federal government and what they can do, the average person. And so that's why I'm saying we need transparency, we need oversight, we need accountability. That's the most important thing.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Congressman
Great
Jared
to see you guys.